My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I am your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, August 1st, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. But if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival. Subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 525. I have a super special return guest, comedian Clark Jones. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with him, with you, in a bit. Right now I'm sitting here in my apartment recording this intro. It's not Sunday. I'm breaking the fourth wall, as I do quite a few times when I do these intros. It's actually Friday night. I'm recording this on Friday because by the time you hear this, I will hopefully be en route back to New Jersey from Maryland, from visiting the parental units. If the Lord is willing it and the creek don't rise. So I wanted to get these intros in. I wanted to upload them so they can be ready to be released, so you guys get them on time. Because I know out of the hundreds of you that listen to this show, there's at least 5 of you that want to have it when you wake up on Sunday. So that's what I do. I do it for you guys. I do this for the people that want their content at 12:01 a.m. And that's what I do. You guys remember that Go-Go song? Is it One Track Mind? It all started 12:01 with the time. One man with $100 in the one track mind. I'm tired of being broke. Being broke ain't no joke. Contemplating, perpetrating, selling coke or dope or something like that. You guys remember that? If you're from the Maryland, D.C. area, you might remember that song. Let me know who did that song and the name of that song. But if you remember that, it might have been One Track Mind or something. I'm not going to Google it. I'm not going to look that up. I'm just going to let you guys do some work. Can you just do something for me? Can you help me out a little bit other than the wonderful people that subscribe to the Patreon? Could you just do something for me and look it up? Tweet at me. Let me know. Oh, Chris, I heard your intro. I actually listened to your podcast, and I'm going to respond to you with a proper answer. How about that? You know, people on social media can be assholes. And this is the first time that I did this. I just tweeted out a little meme of I was in a pretty stressful situation a few days ago. I was at work and my earbuds were dying. And the charging case was dying. And I did not have my USB to USB-C cable to hook up to my computer to charge them. And I asked a couple people, because I don't know if any of you work in an office, but if you don't have your podcast or whatever you do to get you through your day, if you don't have that, your world, like there's been a couple of times where I forgot my earbuds or headphones and I was like, oh shit, almost forgot. I was in my car. And sometimes there's a point of no return when you go to your car and you're like, I'll just fucking fuck it. But then I was like, nope, I need my podcast. I need my Three Guys On. I need my Black Guy Who Tips. I need my Firestarter podcast. I need it because if I don't have it, somebody's going to be angry and TPS reports are not going to get done. They're not going to get done. So part of it's, I don't know if it's a man thing or it's just to not feel vulnerable. You don't want to feel vulnerable at work because those people can rip you apart like a velociraptor. They really can. And you don't want to be vulnerable there. One time when my uncle passed, I was talking to my mother and she was talking to me and I almost broke down, but I had to hold it in. Not because I'm a man and I want to hide my emotions. It's just because I didn't want to see people in the office seeing me cry. So I held it together, got through the office and cried in the car like a fucking adult. Anyway, so I asked somebody and they said, oh, Chris, remember you gave me yours like months ago? And I was like, oh, I did. Okay. Do you have that? And she's like, no, but I have another one. See if this works. And it worked. And I was so happy because it made me feel better about the rest of the fucking day. I was like, oh my God, this is so great. And then she's like, you can have it. And I was like, okay, I'll keep it at my desk. And if you or anybody else needs it, it's at my desk. And, you know, and so I thought, you know, I thought I'd tweet a meme and say, oh, me, what exactly did I say? I'm going to look this up on Twitter. I'm going to go to Chris Lambert's timeline and I'm going to see what I wrote here. Bear with me a moment, folks. This is compelling podcasting here. So I said, me getting a USB cable from a coworker to charge my earbuds. And there's a picture of recent NBA champion Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. I don't know why people like Stephen A. Smith say that this guy can't be the face of the NBA because he's Nigerian and he's from Greece. That's a little xenophobic, Stephen A. Smith. Anyway, there's a picture of him sitting down. He's got his championship hat on, some confetti's on his shoulder, and he's crying. He's having an emotional moment. This guy came from nothing, and he won and a fucking NBA championship, and he's taking it all in. And he's been through so much, and he's crying. And that's how kind of like, memes are an exaggerated version of how you feel, and I thought this was apropos. And it got 13 likes, very extremely modest, a couple of retweets. And I thought it was really funny. I had a good time. I'm glad that some people liked it. And then out of nowhere, this fucker comes and says, buy your own goddamn charging cable. I hate people like you. Have a great day. And then I wrote back. This is the first time I ever did this. I wrote back. I forgot mine at home. So in all caps, fuck off and have a great day yourself, sir. And he wrote back a perfect response with three laughing emojis. Fucking asshole. If you hate people like me, did you need to respond? What a jackass, you know? But when you just try to have a nice, funny, whimsical moment, I don't even know that guy. The guy comes out of nowhere. Piece of shit. Nobody follows him either. Nobody I know follows him. How many followers is this guy? I'm not going to tell you his handle because he can fuck off. Where is it at? Find this shit. He has. How many followers does this guy have? He has 68 followers. And he's followed, it's one comedian. I think that's because this comedian she follows a lot of people. And she, I don't think she really knows how many people she follows. But anyway, that's beside the point. She's more famous than me and had a special out recently. And she seems nice. I don't know her, but she seems like a lovely person. But maybe she follows that guy because she feels bad for him. Anyway, maybe she follows me because she feels bad for me. I don't fucking know. But that just really chapped my ass, as one of my buddies from grad school used to say. He's from Texas. But yeah, that just kind of pissed me off. But anyway, I've blabbed enough. If you want more of me blabbing, go over to Patreon. New shit that just got uploaded today. Let's get you to Clark Jones. Clark Jones is a very funny comic, and I hadn't talked to him in a minute, and I thought I'd reach out, and he immediately responded. I was like, let's do this. You can kind of call this, a Borgata session. This is, you know, this kind of started a couple years ago where I would record episodes of the show while I was at the Borgata with a guest. So this is maybe the restart of a Borgata session. And, you know, Clark and I just caught up and we just started talking about comedy, and he's a writer for Run the World, terrific new show on Stars. I binged them all in a day. It's like, how many episodes are there? I think there's 8, but let me just be right. I want to be right because it's a show with black women. Hold on. Run the World. I think they did 8 episodes, but we will confirm that in a few moments here. Yes, there are 8 episodes. Mm-hmm. They're only about a half an hour a piece. And I started watching them like Sunday morning, and then I finished them like Sunday night. Once I got, I think I was the night that I had to drive down to the Borgata. And we talked about that show, what it's like to write for the show. And it was just good to catch up with him. Clark's a very funny dude, talented guy. And he's doing his thing in L.A. And so, you know, this is what we do on the show. This is a fun episode like you had last week with Gordon Baker Bone and yours truly. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very funny and the very talented Clark Jones.
Yeah, and we were in the basement. Yeah, you came by and set up in the basement. Yeah,
in Brooklyn. Yeah.
In BK. Yeah, in Bushwick. Yep, our first apartment.
And how far we've come?
How far we've come, man.
I'm in Atlantic City on location, working at the Borgata.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's real comedy talk. Man, I'm at the Borg. Remember when we first started and we didn't say stuff like that? You know, man, I'm at the Borgata. We hear the vets talk like that, and it's like, yeah. Oh man, that sounds cool. You're at the Borgata this weekend working?
Yeah, man.
Just like, or just Chicago's like, ah, oh, man, I'm doing a little run through Indiana and Michigan. He's like, dang, you traveling? That was like the coolest thing when I started.
That is, I think it's still cool though. Like if you get to go to another state and make people laugh, I think it's the shit, dude.
It is what it is. It's like, it's tiered though. So like, it's still cool, but there's levels to the shit.
Oh, definitely.
You know what
definitely.
I mean? Yeah. Like pizza's still delicious, but there's different pizzas, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah. I think traveling is dope, but like the better the accommodations. It ain't even about crowd, like, because I've had some great accommodations and been treated really well at kind of shitty shows. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to, like you said, like, people are asking to see me or, you know, without being a household name. And they're like, oh, we got a comedian coming in. And it shows you what life is like outside of a major, you know?
Yeah, and I think my whole life is I've always been surrounded by a major city like Maryland, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. I didn't appreciate the Maryland, D.C. area until I left it. Like, I love where I'm from, but as far as like really knowing the ins and outs and then really getting to learn a city was when I moved to Chicago and like about like, oh, this part of town is this way and you could do this part of town and the black people are here.
The most segregated city in the country.
It's my God.
Without question. And it ain't close.
The first time I did was there, I think within the first, I had to be like the first couple of years I was there.
I was doing some play in the Ida B. Wells projects. I think it was A Raisin in the Sun. We was rehearsing there, and we did.
That sounds like an episode of the Wayans Brothers. I ain't gonna lie to you. It sounds like when Marlon became an actor in like season 4. He was just doing, we just doing black plays in the ghetto.
Yeah. And it was
so great.
It's so funny because we, like, it was the hood, but then I saw a white lady jogging on one block. And then a couple blocks away, it was got a little nicer. And then there was a White Castle. But this movie. What is that movie?
Hardball?
No. Well, Hardball was, that's supposed to be Cabrini Green, right?
Yeah. Was it a major film or independent film?
So this joint, Widows, Steve McQueen joint, where I had my man, shout out to James Vincent Meredith, the actor, Chicago-based actor. He played Colin Farrell's driver, and it was just like this one shot where they went through, he had this monologue, and it's just one shot of him driving through, like from doing a speech on the South Side, then coming back to his rich ass crib. And yeah. It was just like, I was like, that's Chicago. That's like,
yeah. And literally that'll be, he'll do the speech and 30 seconds later it's like, oh, yeah. Damn. Yeah. That's how it used to be. I remember they did The Real World Chicago and they were in, this was at the start of Wicker Park becoming gentrified.
Okay.
And so it was like, it was weird because I was like, that is the city of Chicago, but why are these 6 white people looking so safe? Like, why is it so? So that was, I just couldn't figure out where that was the start of like, man, I got to figure out beyond my neighborhood.
Yeah.
When I saw Real World Chicago, I'm like, that is Chicago. I see a currency exchange. I see like the landscape. I see their building and the skyline in the back, but I just don't know where the fuck that is, where it's just like white folks walking around being drunk and partying and stuff like that. So thank you, Real World, for opening my purview of my own city.
I guess the Real World was Chicago's Lena Dunham to what Williamsburg is.
It exposed it, yeah.
Because I think I always say this, like, on the show, like, after, like, as far as, like, I guess I came up in the alt comedy scene, like, where, like, towards the tail end of it, like, starting in, like, 09, and we used to hang out at Comics. And after that shut down, it was like this crazy diaspora where downtown was there was no real place to really work out. And they tried to do it, but then everything moved over to Brooklyn. And so right around the time Hannibal had the Knitting Factory, so that when that started, that became like the place.
That was the genesis,
yeah.
You know, for better or for worse.
Speak on it though.
Well, okay. We'll get it. First of all, Comics was my first New York show ever. So shout out to Comics.
Yeah.
They used to do like a new comic. It was a bringer show. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that that was had a bad connotation to it, but whatever. I got people out, and it was the first place I ever performed in New York. So rest up, Comics. Yeah. What was that, 24th Street or 14th?
14th and 9th.
Yeah.
And they had this place, this underground bar called the 679 Bar, like across the street, that was really cool.
Yeah, it was a whole vibe.
Yeah.
I think I still got that tape somewhere. But anyway, I with the Brooklyn emergence, it just, a lot of great things, depending on who you are. Like, I always felt like I was a person or a comic who could perform anywhere. And I really don't like labels. And it became a thing where it's like Brooklyn comic.
Yeah.
You know, and that affected. Now, if that's all you want to do, if that's your lane specifically, which is important, I guess, in comedy, to just know, to be able to do one thing or so people can categorize, that's great. And I had great shows in Brooklyn, but it got to a point where it was like, well, I don't. And that show, as a host of it, it was just like, all right, you guys are Brooklyn comics. And it's just like, I am, but I can do it anywhere. You know what I'm saying? I'm a funny comedian instead of a insert where what location I'm at. type of comedian. So that was just some of the pushback, but that's all in the past.
No, it's cool to talk about it sometimes. I mean, I just kind of felt like I was on the periphery. Like I would love to come and do your show. Cause I think like I really only did it with Hannibal once. Hannibal would book me, but it would always be like a guest host. And then you guys did it. And then I did it a couple times and I always had a great time. And that room was not easy. That room was not easy.
Which was, yeah, that was a misconception about, like, oh, you know, it's an easy, people thought it was an easy room, or they thought like people would switch it up their material. Like, I can only speak, I did it when Hannibal was hosting three or four times, and I can't speak on, because the host sets the tone, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, between the three of us, you really had this kind of scale of comedy that the crowd was getting at the beginning, where we were really, like, we weren't trying to say what was the right thing. We just had the right mentality and we tried to be funny.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? It's different than like, oh, let me say this so the crowd will be like, we'll be allies with the crowd. Like, no, we just really believe in gay rights. You know? Like, it's not a put on because we're in Williamsburg. Right. And so, you know, I think comedy crowds like can sense pander, or really, even if you're doing that, it may go over, but it ain't your best stuff. And people don't know, you can just do your best stuff. Just do your best stuff and not be so caught up in, oh, I gotta say this so Williamsburg will like me. That's one thing I try to tell people, and that's really that really is a universal thing, whether it's, no matter where it is, you know, just go down with your best shots.
I never really thought of it that way. I just knew like I wanted to do well. I always looked at that show as like the cool kid show, you know, we talked about, and it was just like you just want to show and prove on that night and take some risks. I mean, I was just gonna say like from just being on the performer side, like the non-host side, it was just like I want to do my best. I want to try. I want to take risks, you know? Like,
right.
It'll be a waste of time if you don't.
The hard thing is, though, I will say is, and this is one thing I love about any show that's a good show, is it could be some really big rolling laughter at Knitting Factory. And then you look up and you're like, damn, I'm lit already. You know what I mean? Like, oh shit, I only got a minute left. You don't want to catch a brick at the end, you know? Yeah. So like you almost gotta come out with the risky stuff. Mm-hmm. But then if it hits and the crowd is rocking with you and the momentum get going, then it's like, damn, did I take a risk? Because it worked. It's like, you did. It's like it's fine to kill. You know, like a lot of that was one of the things with New York, was just this obsession with like, I'm not doing anything if I'm like bombing, but still being successful. It seemed like was the thing. Like I bomb all the time. I'm a great comedian, but look how great my career is going.
Did you feel like it got to a point where New York kind of became industry? I don't know. Cause like, I feel like I started at the time where it was like sort of becoming that. You know, and it just,
well,
do you think comics were like afraid to like not take risks because depending on who would be in the audience?
No, I don't. I agree. Yes. To answer your first question, yes. To answer your second question, I think New York comics got too obsessed with risk or like I'm taking chances on stage because it felt like people weren't. Well, one thing, it didn't feel like the inmates were running the asylum in New York ever. And I don't know about the generations before I was there, but it just seemed like comics were bombing and taking risks. They were risks for even going on stage, period. Comics were bombing hard because success in comedy wasn't predicated on how well you did on stage. It was about everything except that. When I talk about people kind of progressing and like coming up, because some of the success didn't match what was going on stage as far as laughs go.
Like it's casting.
Like it. That's so, yes. Yeah. And to answer your question, yes, because the industry is about casting. So, but did that dictate whether people tried things or, you know, like saying whatever is one thing. Saying whatever because you really think it's funny is something else.
Right.
So I feel like people were doing things, people were failing, but it didn't matter because they already knew they would be at the Borgata in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I was thinking about that shit this morning. I was like, yeah, I'm at the Borgata because I don't get on all the cool kids show. So maybe that's
you
my
never know.
Like, exchange. It's like a couple times a year, I get to do a sweet gig.
I didn't even know how naive I was until about, because at first, you know, I got to New York from Chicago and I'm just like, comedy is comedy. And yeah. Then I was thrust into kind of this position with the show that was very popular, where people, it's tough when people assume you know things and you don't know anything. Because then it's like, when you make a mistake, it's like, but you know better, or else you wouldn't be hosting this show. And I'm like, I didn't know. Yeah. Because it's just, everything is just kind of like, whatever big vit or a club is no different. It's just a roof with people.
Right. It's a room.
To me. Yeah. And that can be a tough mentality to have in New York, where people want you to know how important they are and be treated as such. And if you have enough clout, you can. But if you don't, then you shouldn't.
So is it more so, I know we're talking about New York, but what are there differences like now that you've been in LA? And is it more or less of that?
LA is an anomaly in my comedy trajectory for a couple of reasons. I feel like by the time I got to LA, I had learned so much from New York about people that I didn't know. Had I gone to LA first, I probably would have the same sentiments about there. Gotcha. I just learned a lot about myself and about people the hard way. You know, and also it's like, it's just different. The cities are different as far as stand-up goes and as far as like gender politics go too. So I just feel like by the time I got there, I was seasoned. I had the jokes. I had a little bit better of the outlook. And even if I didn't have the outlook, I knew to say less if I didn't know what the fuck to say. And so, it wasn't like, you know, I just came through and just destroyed that motherfucker. But I was having good sets in LA and some things worked out for me. And I'm, you know, it's made me really love the city. Because it was the first time I went in the city. And I lived in Atlanta, Chicago, New York, LA. It was the first time I went to a city with a comedy goal, and the comedy goal actually happened.
Was that to write?
To write for a television show. That was what I set out to do when I went there. And within a year, I got that gig.
That's great, man. So it run the world.
Run the world on Stars. Yeah, man.
I just binged it on Sunday.
Beautiful.
That's yeah, dope. I enjoyed it. I loved it. Like I don't like the dudes on the show, but
they're mostly trash. Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of trash. And it's not like I'm placating to black women, but it was just like, this guy's an asshole. That doctor guy, he's a dick.
It was a lot of things with that. I was the only straight male writer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What's that? Talk about, just give an overview of that show and then get into being the only straight male on the writing staff.
Well, if you love sex, you'll definitely love it, especially if you're a black woman. If you're a black woman who loves Sex in the City, you'll love Run the World. And even to a higher degree, if you like Sex in the City, you'll love Run the World, because it's way more, you know, relatable, especially if you're going through higher education or if you lived in New York, all these things. And that was intentional. The creator really wanted to show her life that she's lived. We've seen a lot of the other things that on TV about Black women and stereotypes and all this stuff. I don't think you've seen, we've seen this before. Even with like A Girlfriend's, which is a great show, which I love, all the predecessors to Run the World, like, it's just centered around these women's actual lives. And we ain't throwing certain ghetto hood shit in there just to spice it up. It's like, there's enough drama. No matter if you live in America, you got the drama. If you're Black in America, you definitely got the drama. So
yeah,
we didn't have to do anything cheap that wasn't true to what the vision of the creator was. And believe me, I tried, because I thought I had to go in there and like, ooh, what if they like, you know, just from, I didn't even know the influence TV had on me, because I was suggesting things that like, you know, I would be like, oh man, why they have to do that? But you know, as a rookie. And so I had to learn quick, and I got all that out the first day. And they were like, bro, we ain't got to go there with that. We're not going to do any baby mama drama, none of that goofy shit. And I only say it's goofy because of, it would be goofy to put it in this show.
Right.
Like in other shows, it's fine because that really happens. You know, right, what really happens. But that wasn't the case with this. So, yeah, like I had only heard like horror stories about writers' rooms, you know. You know, like knowing SNL writers, I'm like, oh man, you got to come in with 1,000 ideas and pitches and jokes and boo doo. And so I came in and they was like, bro, chill. We just going to talk about things that have happened really to us. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to up those things by bringing the funny in when they need to, when we need to release from the clinch.
Were you the only comedian on the show?
Right. I was only stand up. Yeah. I was only stand up comedian.
And how did that work out for you?
You know, it was dope because a lot of the jokes, because people ask like, oh, did you write that? Did you write that? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, a lot of the jokes came out of riffing.
Yeah.
You know, because we weren't just like, it's not a show where it's like Ali Klemper or something like that, where it's like joke.
Yeah.
It's like
we're more grounded in reality.
More grounded in reality. And what was the funny thing about this real thing that happened?
Yeah.
And so it'll be like that. And so we'll just be talking, or somebody will be telling the story. Then I'll throw in a punchline like, well, what if this happened? Mm-hmm. And when it's not even too necessarily like, hey, I'm pitching this thing. It would be just because when comedians are around talking about stories, my brain naturally is wired now to just say what the funny thing is.
Yeah.
So in that way, and I was the only one who, you know, really knew where the punchline was.
Right.
Like where I could, like if this had happened 2 or 3 years in the comedy, I don't think I would have developed that awareness or that sense of like, all right, this is where the joke is. So it worked out, bro.
That's how I always feel like comedy is like an RPG, like a role-playing game in a video game, where it's like you build certain like attributes up, and
right.
And you can never really become bigger than the craft itself, but you can add to it and you can add your own flavor to it. And
absolutely, yeah.
And that's a great thing that you had that self-realization that, look, a few years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that, but now I can, and now it could buy me groceries.
It can. It bought me a car. My first car came off comedy money.
So congratulations, like, man. That's what's up.
Thank you, man.
That Writers Guild, young. Writers
Guild, bro. Man. Oh, they send 8,000 emails a day, but it's fine. Like, I'm just like, I'm probably missing something because y'all keep telling me about things and I just don't have the time for it. But it's great. The health insurance is the best part.
Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah. I see where I saw Actors Equity, the theater, the stage realm of acting, they're opening up more to be more inclusive. And I see where certain people, white people, getting angry that, you know, that it's going to be, people are going to have more access. But I think one is probably, I got to talk to a friend about why that happened, but I have one reason I think they obviously want more money. They want people to pay dues, but it'll allow people to have access. And
which is what we need, man. Like just like on a personal level, I'm sure you had the same case of just really understanding or really thinking growing up, jobs in film, movie, television, whatever, was like was producer, director, actor.
Yep.
And it's just like, well, I don't know how to do any of those three things. So let me look at, okay, I'll be a doctor or a lawyer or try to be. You know what I mean? Like, so the access to know that more exists, like, will, like, that just changes. And the earlier you know, the more you can, like, move towards these things. Like,
yeah,
knowing that, like, you know, you don't want to be in front of the camera. Like, you could be shy. It's like, yeah, but that make the most money. It's like, you could be an editor making $1 million a year chilling without anybody knowing who you are.
Yeah, it's such a, and I was back on set working on a pilot last week, and I never took any of this shit for granted. I think the older you get, the more you appreciate things, but I was somebody that never really took it for granted. But you just realize how massive it is just to, from whether you're a day player or whether you're a series regular, it's such an ecosystem. A set is such an ecosystem. Yes. Hair and makeup, production, sound, lighting, all of that stuff. And it's
post.
Yeah.
Video village. Yeah. Like all these. And like the video village is just this. Yeah. This micro ecosystem of just, we just over here. Y'all send us the stuff and the director or whoever may go back and forth. But it's literally a village that they're over there just working with dailies. And it's just, you know.
It's
obviously not a talent based thing. It's a knowledge and awareness based thing where it's like, we don't even know. I didn't know what a video village was until I did Crashing. And then that's when I was like, oh, they got a whole bunch of just jobs over there.
Tell the listeners about video village. What is it?
It's just the area where they deal with the dailies while we're filming. I think some shows they may do all the editing later or whatever, but some things need to be done right, you know, and then the writers, some depending on the writing staff, they're in there. So like you'll have just all these people that you won't see on screen ever, but all those names usually at the end of the show where you're just like, who are these people? They just folks in the video village.
Yeah.
Just editing and color correcting and doing all these things while we go. And so, like, if a show is ran, I think, and I'm not, back me up on this or not, but, like, if a show is, like, 12 episodes, 18 episodes, even though we're shooting, they may be shooting episode 10, but editing episode 1 or 2.
That's true. Yeah, they could be. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's just this other little separate part of the set where people are getting things prepared to be on TV.
Yeah. And how long was the process from you getting the writing gig? Did you submit a packet or how did that work?
Long story was Kevin Barnett told me I was bullshitting because I didn't have any samples. Rest in power, Kevin Barnett.
Yes, sir.
Great writer, great comedian, great dude. Butt slapping Kev. I was talking to him, thinking I was gonna get some sympathy about something, and he's like, "What the fuck are you talking about, man? You have nothing. You have nothing." Mm. So he's like, "Fuck the show. Fuck Comedy at the Knitting Factory. I don't host that shit. Look how much money I got." So, wow. He was just roasting me, and I was just so I had nothing else, so I took what he was saying. Like people, I'll let anybody roast me. If they have a thing that I'm trying to learn or get from, because you let people talk who are in positions that you want to be in, and something valuable is going to come if you know how to search for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ain't have to search deep. I didn't have shit. I didn't have a writing sample at all. So I wrote a pilot in, I think it was 2018, maybe.
Okay.
And, you know, I sent to a bunch of people and I did a bunch of rewrites. And by the time this show came along, it was ready. And so when it was asked for, I didn't have to wait a couple days or I didn't have to do the rest of the week. Like I sent it right away.
Gotcha.
And so we did that. And then it had to get approved by Yvette Lee Bowser and it had to get approved by Lionsgate. And then we had a meeting. And then, like, over the course of a week, I had to redo my pilot again because I did an hour pilot. And then over the course of a week, because I had flew back home and I got a call. I was on the way to a show. I got a call like, hey, you know, you're a part of the staff.
Shit, that's great.
It was wild. It was wild for Yvette Lee Bowser to call me to say I was hired for a show.
That's amazing, dude.
This person who created Dwayne and Ron from A Different World and created Living Single and did all these things in the industry.
Yeah.
Was hiring me for a job. It was insane. I was nervous meeting her.
Yeah.
I was nervous as shit, man.
Did she do Sister Sister also?
She didn't. She worked on,
let me look her up.
She worked on a bunch. She was head writer for A Different World.
Yeah,
she was head writer for that. And she did Half and Half, which is like a Sister Sister.
I remember that. Okay. For Your Love, yeah. Single, Lush, like Hang With Mr. Cooper, A Different World.
Yes.
Holy shit. Yeah. I know she's an OG.
OG in the game. Yeah. So that was
damn.
Yeah, that just being in LA with in a real meeting.
Yeah.
With somebody who's, you know, and this is all legit. That's when I knew I was kind of doing something in the industry. That's when I felt man. It.
That's real, man. It's like it's so fascinating how, I mean, I'm an actor, started as an actor, suppressed stand-up for a long time, but it's crazy how stand-up kind of propels you into these situations that you mm-hmm. are ready, like you were ready for it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like when it came time to be within the right spaces. And that's the thing, man. I'm not really grappling with it, but I think the country is just not understanding how, like, these opportunities come up. Like Black people, we do have to be ready for that shit.
We gotta be 100%. Like motherfuckers will tell you, oh yeah, it's no rush, you know, just send us a sample whenever you get it. But that hits different when before you leave that networking event or that rap party for that show, mm-hmm. and somebody says that to you, and before they leave, it's in their inbox. And it's not just sloppy, it's something that you've been working on for 2 years.
Yeah.
That puts you ahead of the pack. Same thing with these self-tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you just, as soon as you get that shit, do that shit.
Yeah.
They say Monday, but if you get it on Friday, have that shit in by Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, I had one of the best self-tapes I ever did. Like, I was just like, still didn't get the part, but that shit was, I felt
yeah.
that. I was
motherfuckers
doing it. Yeah.
Will remember that, dude. They'll remember if your shit, if you're on point. And so yeah. It's hard. I know, because we're artists and, you know, just our lives are just a little bit more like, sometimes we just need to live and all of that. But mm-hmm. when it comes to the business, you got to be on business, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It'll, The most on point I've ever been was with this pilot, and it led to a gig. And
it's gonna lead to other stuff too.
If I could just stay on point,
work,
because it hasn't failed me. Yeah, it hasn't. And it may not be, because I thought it was gonna be like, oh man, as soon as I get on a TV writing gig, these motherfuckers gonna be on my dick. Like I thought it was gonna be crazy, but no, I still haven't reached that point where it's autonomous yet. Like I still got to,
yeah.
And that's that first realization too. Realizing like, damn, okay, this wasn't, I'm in the game, but the game ain't over by a stretch.
Right.
But it is dope. And what it motivates is like, I found out it's easier to get drafted into the major leagues than it is to get your first TV writing gig.
Shit.
By the numbers.
That doesn't sound too off now that I think about it.
It's, I mean,
sound,
yeah, like I could be playing single A mm-hmm. quicker if I had kept playing baseball. But you know, what's meant for me or what's meant for you, what's meant for any of us, it ain't gonna pass us up.
That's no, true. No, and I have to come to grips with that, because it's like I was trying to get, like, it's happened a couple times with some TV shows. Like I was auditioning a lot for like New Amsterdam, and it just never came up, or where they would be like, oh, we're talking to the producers and we're gonna, and it would be always. Like, and they're like, oh, well, you were in this, and tough problem to have. I did a small part on a pilot that did 12 episodes, and they're like, oh, you can't be on the same. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
It's so many rules yeah. that work, especially coming from comedy. So many rules work against you at the beginning that yeah. unless you're rich, unless you come from money, but they work against you until they all start working for you.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a process. Like, I forgot what you were.
Like getting on TV shows and stuff like that. Like I'm in a hotel. So what was it? Kelly Ripa and Seacrest were on, and they interviewed Kelly Ripa's son, and her son's going to be on Riverdale. And he's like, oh, I just thought I'd try acting. And it's like, yeah, because you're 24, you're a good looking kid, but you're Kelly Ripa's son. And that's like, yeah, you dude, probably.
when I found out, I forgot who it was, but they got casted as, I think it was Han Solo, the new Han Solo, one of them, okay. Somebody got casted because they met Steven Spielberg at their bar mitzvah. And Steven Spielberg was like,
can't beat
you're going to be the new Kylo Ren or whatever. It was something to that effect. So, you know, it's not bad to come for money and to have access.
Yeah. Because
right? That's what we're talking about. You got to have access.
But go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
Well, I was saying, even with this, knowing some of the people from like being an HBCU grad and working on a Yvette Lee Bowser show, those things didn't hurt me that I had this woman who created or was the head writer for A Different World, like knew that I knew about because the women on the show are Spelman graduates, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like the access to be able to go away to a private school, even though I had student loan, whatever, but just knowing that that happened. And representation is big, because the only reason I went to Morehouse was because I saw School Days when I was like 10 come on WGN. And I was just like, what place is that?
Yeah.
Where all these black people are in school and it's just black people at the school. Ain't no white people. Like, what college is this? So I was just fascinated by that. And that led to all these things led to each other to where I am today.
But that's true. But there's also still sweat equity on your part to get the degree to make those connections. And I think that's like white America doesn't really understand that. Like they think, Clark just got an opportunity because he's black. No, motherfucker.
Like, and it's not just because that's however you understand the game to be. That's your only. And we as comedians, I feel like I said this when I did the podcast six, seven years ago, that we lean to our own understanding way too much. Mm-hmm. Most of the times when somebody say, oh, they only got that because of this, or this only happened because of that, 99% of the time they're wrong.
Yeah, it's like that Rachel Nichols shit.
Ooh, that's a crazy story.
I said this for a couple of weeks. That's my favorite type of white woman, redhead. And I think she's Jewish.
I like it, too.
And I was like, God damn it,
Rachel. Jewish. I think she married Jewish.
She married Jewish. Rachel.
But you know the nepotism part of that.
Of course.
Yeah. Like your mother-in-law is Diane Sawyer. Mm-hmm. It's like, girl, you was born on third base. Stop acting like you hit a triple.
Yeah.
And just live with that. Mm-hmm. And she seemed, honestly, it got overblown, I think, because I think Rachel Nichols was just like, she said what anybody in that position would say. It's not like they went in on anything. Mm-hmm. Like the smoke didn't match the fire, for real. But, and nothing changed. Like, she didn't work one of the, I don't know, I don't care about no Milwaukee Phoenix finals.
Well, I want to talk about that too. You being a Midwest guy, I want to talk about that. It makes me mad because I hear some of these white guys, white comedians that I used to like. I still respect them or whatever, but maybe I don't know if I say that.
That's funny.
Don't fuck with them heavy like I used to. I lost respect for them where there's people that have success. These are cats that have more success than we did back then. And they still kind of, some of them have plateaued. And they plateaued and I'm not getting this because this black person got a show. Or they're giving them out to black. But maybe your shit isn't good, dog. Maybe your pilot was not good.
The system has not changed. White privilege is still as alive and well.
Right.
You know, everything ain't. So, like, just a little bit of pushback, a little bit of adversity, and all of a sudden you ain't getting no more gigs.
Right.
You really didn't have the talent, bro. I got to be honest. A little bit of pushback because, you know, there's been a wave. Not a wave, because I don't want to overblow it. But in certain spaces, people have been trying to make up for the lack of representation of black women in comedy, in different things. And if I had no talent, I'd be like, man, fuck all this, man. I ain't getting nothing. It's like, no, a little bit of adversity or diversity, I should say, ain't going to stop the show. We gave the show to three black women because we wanted more of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was the you're not mad at the comics didn't do anything to you. You know, it's like it's almost like when somebody's given something and they don't do well. It's like you wouldn't have said no to it either. Nobody would have said no. So I don't know. It's just I'm hoping with the return from the pandemic, we're slow to get as mad at each other as we used to be. But that's like a microcosm for, you know, how our country works.
And yes. Yeah.
Rich people keep poor people mad at each other and thinking we're the cause of each other's problems and not the people making the decisions.
Yeah. 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 It's just a thing where it's just like you just see more. Like I looked at the Emmy noms. I was like, it's a lot of us that got nominated. And people was like, you know, Don Cheadle got nominated for like being in Falcon and the Winter Soldier for like 3 minutes or whatever. But I was like, hey, so what?
What's her name? Lauren Ashley Smith. She got nominated against herself. She wrote like two shows. I forget. I think that's her name, Lauren Ashley.
I don't know. Let me see.
Black girl writer. I forgot, but Lauren she was Ashley. Nominated for two shows. So I'm just like, hey, get it.
Yeah, get good it. For her.
Good for her.
What else did she? Is Black Lady Sketch Show maybe? Let's see.
Black Lady Sketch Show, and she did one other show.
Between Two Ferns. Well, that's right. The Rundown with Robin Thede. She was in Between Two Ferns, the movie.
For it was when she got nominated for her writing.
Okay, so The Rundown, and then only credits I see is Black Lady Sketch, and Robin Thede's.
She posted the photo.
Okay.
But I forget what the noms were.
Good for her. Shit, you know.
Very talented woman. And they, you know, it's different. Like, yeah, there's always gonna be some nepotism. There's always gonna be some trickery because comedians never tell the full story. We'll never tell the full story. But you know, what a lot of us when we see the success is like, damn. You can't even be mad because they definitely put that work in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even if you don't know their whole story, you know that shit, they black in America, man. They've been through something, you know?
Yep.
So we gotta get rid of the hate.
Yeah. It's hard for me to hate. I like seeing them get and shit. Like, I mean, I really like Mayor of Easttown, but I think if somebody black win, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Man, Kate going to be all right.
I don't root for everybody black, but I mostly root for black folks. I can't root for everybody black. I want Flatbush misdemeanors to win. It's so crazy. Like our people are on that stage. Like people we like our class of or generation, whatever, like are on that. And it's funny because it's like because we know them, it's almost like, oh, like, well, the Emmys or the Oscars or whoever, like they've reached out and was like, no, our people have just have leveled up and gotten to that space. Like the Lucas Brothers get nominated for an Oscar. Like,
it's insane.
They've just reached a certain status.
I did open mics with those dudes. Dude, it was kind of out of here. They was kind of out of there for like from the jump. But like, I remember. Sure. But they like, I just remember being at the, what is it? The fucking, oh my God, what's the other in the pit doing an open mic, and they were there. And I was like, oh, I like that joke. This, I like the fucking, it was a black sports writer joke. What is a $40 million slave? What's that black? Will they did a fucking William C. Roden joke. And that's I was like, I get it, but
at the pit.
Yeah.
On 24th Street in New York City.
Yeah. I was with like
three people. Which like, is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I loved it.
Six of us crashed at Ramon Rivas's house for a festival.
Yeah.
Like, he just up in the house cramped. This was years ago. It's just like,
was it 2015? I got
Accidental Comedy Fest. It might be.
I got a pick of you and Will and me in 2015. It's on my.
That might have been it.
That was fucking fun. That's the best. That's arguably one of the best times I ever had at a festival. Fuck Montreal.
Yeah, man. Fuck Montreal. Just for these nuts.
Yeah. They'll come later once you have your own show, and they're like, Clark Jones is a.
You literally don't care at that point. Like, it's only a couple. Like, I know I made it for real when I legitimately don't care.
Yeah,
it's like two or three things that I really am still bitter about. Uh-huh. And you know, I'm trying to outwork the bitterness.
Oh, dude. Ooh, I like that. Might be a title of the fucking show. I think it's okay to have those human moments where you are bitter. Cause for the past month, I've seen people that are working at the Comedy Cellar, and I'm like, what the fuck? And it's like, I think yeah. And I think that's healthy. And I said, but I can't lose sleep over that, but I still have to continue working and enjoying the rooms that I play in and that I get to, you know, play in. So yeah, I think it's healthy. I think it's helping.
Yeah, as long as it's still motivating you to work.
Yeah.
And still motivating you to create things, which, you know, you got to have a little bit of, depending on who you are. I in New York, that helped me to write more because the one thing I really loved about that city is performing.
Right.
And I felt guilty. I could never keep doing the same set over and over again. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So, like, that. You know, you find out somebody got something, which was all the time, and you just go, whatever problem I'm having in comedy, and this is the best thing I feel about being a stand-up comedian, whatever problem you're having, you can write your way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, I was having money problems, so I had to write a pilot so I could get to a place where I could make money off comedy. Your bits ain't hidden, write new bits. You had a show or you got an opportunity and it's a certain type of crowd, write the material that'll work for that crowd. Like, you always have the opportunity to write your way out of whatever problem you're having. Or if you just socially you fucked up, write the right thing. Write an app notes apology. Like, it's always back to writing something and creating something.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to move on to sports. I initially wanted to start the conversation with this, but we jumped into comedy. Sometimes we talk about stuff that's going on, and then it's just, I always love talking shop, you know. So I don't, it doesn't.
Sure.
It's not.
And it's deeper than that. Like, some of the stuff we were just talking about, like, it applies not just to comedy, but to life in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Giannis the best basketball player of all time?
Not even close. Not even close.
That seems like what people say every time somebody wins.
Potential, sure, but when he's the odds-on favorite, and he wins anyway, then we can start talking about that.
Yeah.
It's something about the target being on your back that gives more credit to that type of title of the best.
Mm.
You can't be the best coming out of nowhere. You can't sneak up.
Yeah.
Being the best. You know, like when people I put those Warriors teams as the best of this generation because people knew what they were getting. People mm-hmm. expected them to win and they did it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's my personal thing.
I agree. I think that target is one thing. And I just think the way that he, I'm a LeBron fan just because the media, and I grew up watching MJ. I had the WGN feed back in Maryland when I was growing up. So I love Michael too. Maybe LeBron's a better person.
Maybe
after the Last Dance. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows what charitable and PR events Michael would have pulled if he had the camera on him all the time like LeBron has.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, LeBron's life is, his career is a PR thing. Mm. It's not even, everything is about, and like, what, you know, I'm from Chicago, but like, right. One thing I will give LeBron, he's probably the most cerebral outside of like maybe Kareem, Magic to a degree, but like, his mental acuteness for everything around him, I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, fuck this 6'9", 260, all of that, fast as a deer, all that shit. But like mentally, he might be one of the smartest to ever play the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what people would say. They used to say like he was like a computer out there.
Like, that's what it feels like. That's what it feels like. He uses his mind, uses his body instead of like a Michael or a Kobe where they use their body to give them a mental edge.
Yeah.
LeBron is head first and then uses his body, you know, reacts to what's the best basketball play. Because percentage wise, Kyle Korver has a better shot of making that three than me making free throws and getting fouled.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's real. I think, Giannis, I mean, I was just thinking like, oh, these guys had like 40 points, like it, two or three 40 point games in the finals. Then he hit a 50 and it just seemed like they wanted it more. Chris Paul was probably hurt. I think they didn't want to say it.
Maybe, man, but when he was hitting that 4-point play against the Clippers, he looked okay to me.
Oh, like, no, I mean in the finals. I think he got
in the finals.
Yeah, I think retweet. I think something happened like with his hand or
possibly,
something.
But look, at the point that they got to the finals, at that point, you know, he's shown them so much and they've learned so much. And like, you know, Devin Booker, you gotta that energy. It's something about, and it, you know, the Clippers weren't at full strength. I think if the Clippers were at full strength, they would have beat Phoenix. But people take their foot off the gas when they close out LeBron.
Hmm.
And so I think when Booker came out and he showed out in game 5 against the Lakers and really like dropped like 30, 49 maybe or 39 and just got them out of the way, like it's something about like you, he just wasn't like you're supposed to take that and then just average like 38 for the rest of the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Like you ain't did shit yet. Yeah. All you did like beating LeBron ain't the championship unless, you know, you Golden State or whatever. But like, like he is something he exhaled, I think, after they beat LeBron, because he has all the talent and the scoring ability to drop 40 a game.
Yeah.
And he just had to do that. We saw it. Like, he just, you know, he got under the Clippers' skin. I think that Phoenix had more talent. Just, I don't know. Something just wasn't there.
Yeah, it just seemed like they kind of, because it's like, damn, they beat them 4 in a row. It's like, shit.
Right.
This is just, I was like, wow, I thought it was going to be more of a challenge. But, I mean, they were there. The Bucks were healthy. But the narrative that everybody wants to play is just like, oh, Giannis stayed and he won it with the place that drafted him. I was like, I get that. That's a good story, but
we got to do this. It got to be a story. Come on, actor. I know we got to have a story.
But if I could be one of those dudes too. But if KD like had smaller feet, I mean, they'd be out of it. you know,
a lot of ifs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of ifs, but they did it. Like they did it. And it's a great fucking story. I'm so great that I'm going to get that book when it comes out. I'm going to pre-order
I'm more impressed with PJ Tucker, this 6'8" center.
Uh-huh.
And somebody had pointed out, like, in each round of the playoffs, he beat one of the old Houston Rockets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that.
That was kind of sick. Yeah. And, like, the big boss was Chris Paul. Chris Paul was the last boss he had to beat from that Rockets team. And, he was guarding KD.
Yeah, he was. So hard.
You got to give PJ Tucker. He's great. And they've been knowing each other forever, you know, since Texas.
Yeah, he's a goon.
Big time.
Best sneakers in the game.
That's what I want. I want to see what sneakers he going to drop. Because you know he's going to do something crazy for the parade. I want to see what he's wearing.
I still think he wears those Kobe ADs a lot. Which I
even wear some we never saw.
Oh no, I know, but like just in general, he has like the year before he died, 2018. I love those sneakers. They're so good. Like I'm hard pressed to find some more, but those are fucking great.
I got Kobe jerseys. I don't have any Kobe sneakers. I got to get some. But Kobe died on my birthday. That was wild.
Oh, shit.
He died on my birthday. It was wild. I'm waking up thinking I'm going to see texts about happy birthday. And it's like, man, Kobe did Kobe? Kobe ain't dead. Oh, wow.
Yeah, man.
Kobe Bean.
It's still, like, I feel like, obviously, you know, his family is feeling it more, but I just feel like we did get robbed, and we got robbed of like post NBA Kobe to like just come in and do podcasts and shit on people. And
yeah, you know, all he did was the smoke.
He did knuckleheads too, but it was like
he did knuckleheads too.
Yeah, it's up. Yeah, he did the knuckleheads. Dang, too.
Okay, I got to see that.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, and like it was just like, man, like shitting on people then. You see where he mentored people. I like how the narrative changed in the finals where it's like, he told Devin Booker to be relentless. And then he has the tattoo. And then after they started losing, it was like, well, Kobe also talked to Giannis. And
you know who they love to do that with? You know who they love to play Kobe mentored him with? Who's the number one person? You know. Who do they always mention Kobe with? And this person drives, anytime he kills, it drops
Tatum,
50.
Tatum.
Yes. Jason Tatum. They want that story so bad, but something's up with Boston. All that talent and they couldn't win. That's crazy.
It's fucking weird. Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't even work on 2K when you try to play with them.
It's something like Brad Stevens calls a timeout without you asking, like your button slip and you call. No, I didn't mean to give them 3 seconds. And Devin Booker knocked down the three. It's wild.
Are you a gamer at all? Do you have?
I am. I play 2K online with the guys. We got like a little comedian, player thing we do. I'm all the sports stuff I play.
And are you going to get drawn into getting 22? 2K22 or
I probably am because I got the new Xbox.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna get it for that because me and my brother's a game. Like my brother at one point was like the number one Madden player.
Oh wow.
In the country. Shit. Off like modded. I think it's called like modded team Madden or something like that.
Okay.
He was number one. So he's a big gamer. And so when I'm in LA, we get to connect and I'll be able to play 2K and stuff like that.
I think you got to chalk it away for a yearly expense. Like, I think I'm just over, like, people bitching about, because I just play at home by myself, and I just always have to get the new upgrades. Like, oh, my God, look different. You know,
you're going to get the game. Just eat it and buy it right away so that way you can build up your VC, build up your player, do all your stuff. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be midway. People are going to have it for like 30 days, 60 days already. And now you're going to try to jump in and you're late to everything. So just get it because you're going to get it anyway. At least this is me talking to myself. You're going to get the game. So just get it early and get the Kobe jersey that come with the package. How do you feel about that, man?
I feel like they used to, they just... Trying to make money off his death, man. It's just,
I understand that. I understand it because people like to forget, and as great as Kobe was, people will forget if it's not, they're not reminded of it. Mm. They're making money off of it, but I'm sure in some kind of way, Kobe's family or his legacy or his foundation is seeing some of that money too. Cause you can't just use his image willy nilly. You know what I'm saying?
I hope so. Yeah.
People got to sign off on that. Yeah. They got the damn statue in the 2K beach of Kobe. So like,
oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah. See, yeah. That yeah.
Deep in, and I know, see, like I'll just get it. I'll get it and run. Like I was running with the Suns and before they make their playoff run, and I just play with, because I like the young, because I like that young
team. Yeah.
I like Bridges. I like obviously I like Devin and
Bruce. I like Aiden.
Yeah,
I like
Aiden. Good too. So it's kind of like I like that, and then Chris Paul's a veteran, but I got my ass kicked by the fucking Utah Jazz. So I'm like 5-2.
Spider Mitch, he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider Mitch is a baller.
I saw the new shit. I was like, oh, I'm going to get this. The new like stuff on Instagram, like the new covers. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get this shit. And I'm probably going to get
it. Wait, is it out?
It's coming out like September. September.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's usually like around the start of the season. Yeah.
But they got
I'm definitely going to get it. I don't need to pre-order. I don't need to do that because I just get it. But like, shit, what they need is some more controllers because – and some more PlayStations, because that's really the problem.
I found a PS5 in February.
Oh, nice.
On Target. And I just like kept hitting, and I had to drive like an hour and a half to get it.
But you got it.
I got it. Yeah, I was like, you know, I hit my boss. I was like, can I take a half day? And I just said, I went down and got it.
Took care of business.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, so, I mean, I like it, but I think we're just at the... I think Xbox seems to be doing better as far as like the games are concerned. And I think PlayStation still has to do, like, we're going to make this game for PS5 and PS4 for at least another year or so because of the pandemic. And because like they haven't been producing as many systems because of that chip, that AMD chip shortage.
Well, thankfully MLB The Show is cross-gen. And I'm hoping 2K is cross-gen. So then I can still play my PlayStation homies.
Yeah.
And be on the Xbox. That would be incredible. Yeah. And a win for everybody, I feel like.
Yeah, they have to take into consideration this certain, but this is what I didn't like about 2K last year. I couldn't wait because I didn't know when I was going to get a PS5. So I said, I got to get 2K. And I bought it. And then they only, if you'd have bought the Kobe edition, you'd have spent $100, you could do the cross gen. But I had to buy that motherfucker again. And I was like, I'm going to.
So you can do cross gen on 2K? I mean, cross platform, not cross gen, cross platform. So you can play Xbox people on PlayStation.
No, I don't know about that. But like, I had to get the PS4. I bought the PS4 game, and if I wanted to play with the updates and all that with the fly next gen shit, I had to drop another 60 or 70.
Yeah. Well, fuck it, man. You just gotta eat that.
I did it.
Yeah,
I did it. Just because they look, the guys look. It's a homoerotic thing. The guys look better.
You see the sweat beads.
See the sweat and all that shit. So, and I think it comes from me being a card collector when I was a kid. So it's like, oh, this is the updated thing. This is the roster. This is this and that. So that's just a yearly expense that I have to put in on it. Yeah. So you're just mainly a sports guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just mindless, numbless thing that I can just waste away time on. And
I'll tell my listeners that I'm not going to mention what they think I'm going to mention. And I'll just tell you off mic because I know they roll their eyes at that. So I'm not.
You know what? Let me take that back. Here's the other thing. I'm a little. It's not that I only play those sports. It's only what I'm playing right now because I mean GTA needs to drop that 6. Like, come on, bro. Like, it's been forever. Like, stop with the updates. Stop with the messages. We need a new city. Yeah. I saw the new Red Dead, but like, I've been playing so much MLB The Show. I just didn't need to add another thing. So I love Red Dead. I love GTA. I hated that Avengers.
I just bought that. People were
People
it's fucking so hated trash. It. They it's said it's so trash, but then did you see that Black Panther trailer though?
No, I didn't. But so, I'll get that. Avengers.
But if you got it, you'll get it for free in August. I think it's just like a download joint. That's the only reason I got it. Cause that shit, they didn't get Chad, but they got the brother that played Kratos in God of War. He's voicing T'Challa. And it looks amazing. I was like, well, I guess I'm getting that Avengers game. I paid $24.
I appreciate them trying to make up for it because the endless butt mashing of that Avengers game and then the little story, I was just not interested in any of that.
Did you beat it?
No, I couldn't. I just got into 2K more.
Oh,
I was like, because I had such high expectations because Spider-Man was so dope.
Spider-Man was amazing.
Spider-Man was so dope. I was like, how are they gonna mess it up by adding more characters? And somehow it just wasn't fun.
Did you play Miles though? Miles Morales?
I was on the one before, like what was the
2018 joint?
Yeah, 2018 Spider-Man. Okay. I didn't get the new one after.
Oh, well, you will. Well, maybe you could if you get a PlayStation soon, then maybe you could wait. But like, yeah, that's great. So look, dude, let's wrap this up. I know you gotta go. I'm gonna send you that trailer. Dude, this has been fucking great. It was great to chat with you. Plug anything you got going on. Watch, everybody needs to watch Run the World on Stars. I did. It's great. Are you gigging in the city at all, at Chicago?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago. When does this drop?
It'll drop not this weekend, but next weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be back in LA next week. But just follow me on everything. The Clark Jones, T-H-E-E Clark Jones. And definitely binge what Run the World, because a lot of people waited. They like to watch, make sure everything is up when they watch it. Cool. Well, now's the time. Eight half an hour episodes. So you got the time. You can do that in a day.
Yeah.
And then I want to hear feedback too from the listeners too, what they think about the show, what they would change. Mention me, send me an at, or put it on Instagram, wherever. I love to hear from people.
The guys are all toxic, but that's how that makes the show fun. So
yeah,
they can't have perfect relationships.
The girls, it's about the girls, man.
Yeah. Because anytime you're talking at the screen, like, and you're alone, then you know the show's good. And you're just like, if you just like,
what?
This nigga, you need to get away from him. Stop. Why his ass. Right. Taking care of his kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And he eating scones.
Get the fuck. I was mad as fuck. All right. Well, I want to spoil it. Clark, thank you so much, brother. I really
appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me, man. This is great. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you, bro.
Yes, sir. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy.
Peace.